Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. Joining us on the line is Aaron Benderly, Vice President for Policy and Strategy with the Pelican Institute. Recently, the BSEE board brought forth a matter where they were trying to, I guess, bend the rules, relax the rules to allow those that have not met the minimum criteria for graduation requirements to allow them to go ahead and move forward. And it seemed to be a contentious issue that ended up falling one vote short of passing just yesterday. And here to talk about that is Aaron Benderly, the Vice President for Policy and Strategy with the Pelican Institute. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Noel. Thanks for having me on.
So, Aaron, if you could just provide some backdrop to this issue, how we got to where we were and why it ended up before the BSEE board.
Sure. So you're right. The board called an emergency meeting this past week to consider this issue. The proposal that was on the table was to continue a waiver that was actually given last year to schools across the state for students having to meet the graduation requirements. So a lot of people may not be familiar with the fact that in order to get a high school diploma in Louisiana, you not only have to earn a certain number of Carnegie credits and your courses that you take and pass, but you also have to score a certain standard on our state LEAP end of course test in English, math, and either science or social studies to show that you've mastered basic skills to earn that diploma. And so last year, due to the effects of COVID, the board approved a waiver to say if students don't meet that score, then they can still earn their diploma. And so the proposal before the board yesterday that was, again, brought up with not a lot of notice would be to extend that waiver provision for another year. And I think one of the reasons why it sparked as much, questions and concerns as it did is really just in light of the fact that the standard itself is already pretty low. A lot of people think that you have to pass these tests, you know, at a mastery or proficiency level when actually all you have to do is score an approaching basic level, which is, just one level above failing. Already there have been concerns for many years that our standards are still pretty low.
So how many kids were actually impacted or did not meet the minimum requirement?
According to the Department of Education, it was about 2,400 students. And, you know, this is something that for as long as Louisiana has had this requirement, which is at least 12 to 14 years, unfortunately, every year there's a small percentage of students who don't meet the requirement, and it is unfortunate. You know, for students that have been served in our public schools for 13 years to get to the very end and to not have received the supports necessary to meet an approaching basic level, it is very concerning. But this was not something new that came about as a result of COVID. This is a lingering challenge that Louisiana has had. Really needs to get ahead of. And I believe that we have an opportunity to do so right now, particularly with the $4 billion in federal relief money that our schools have received. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be able to provide the interventions and support students need to get them across that bar and to be able to set them up for success beyond high school. You know, college and the workplace are not getting less demanding, they're getting more demanding. And we hear it from colleges who are getting students who have to take remedial courses every year. We hear it from employers who, you know, want to hire people with basic skills. We still have a challenge, and we've got to make sure that our kids are what we always say, you know, that they are truly college and career ready when we give them a diploma. That's what it's supposed to signify.
Is your appreciation that that was actually the irritant? It's almost as though we were using the pandemic as an excuse, because we have historically had the same issue presented year after year after year after year as a challenge in our educational system.
I believe that that was certainly some of the concern about the effect of the policy. You know, I believe that the people who brought this proposal forward and ultimately voted for it, you know, I certainly believe that they approached this in a way that they wanted to do what they believed was right for students. Everyone wants to help students. We all do. No one wants students to not be successful. But I do think we have to look at the effect of the policy and what that represents. You know, if we really want schools to be focused on helping every child meet their potential, you know, get across what is a very minimal bar to truly set them up for success, I think we have to give these things scrutiny. We can't rush into these decisions in a very rushed fashion without having all the information that we need to know exactly, you know, what we're doing and what effect that's going to have, not only on this year's students, but what does that say overall about our standards? And what does that say to the school system about the extent to which they have to focus their time and energy on minimizing the number of students who find themselves in this situation every year?
So what did they say that actually occurred, other than pandemic, that they failed in providing to students?
There was a lengthy discussion about one particular test that some people are questioning, to say maybe there's some, you know, some reason to take a look at the social studies test, particularly U.S. history. That when the department looked at the data, it appears as though a large number of students, or at least I should say a higher percentage than the other test, that students were having trouble passing that U.S. history exam, and I believe the one right under that was the science exam. And look, I get it. Those are two hard subjects. When you look at American history, that's a lot of content for students to learn about. You know, I have a child attending public schools, and already he's come home with homework about U.S. history, and there's a lot to learn there. But if that's something that we as a state believe that students should be exposed to and learn, that's part of our state standards, then I think it's appropriate to say, you know, we need to measure how much students have actually learned. How effective have we been at teaching them that particular material? The same thing with science and biology. And again, we're talking about approaching basic standard. We're not to even, and that's two full levels below what we consider to be proficient. And so we have to ask ourselves, you know, what are we doing to make sure that students who may not pass this test the first time, we have time and we certainly have resources right now to spend that whole next year, their senior year, making sure that they get interventions, they get credit recovery. There are a number of strategies that we can use to help them get across the bar and meet the requirement.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and what kind of caught my attention here is the actual physical number of students are relatively the same from 2019, 2020, and 2021. The percentages change, but that's because we had shrinking enrollment within the public school system. Am I correct in that assumption?
That was a lot of the discussion yesterday as well, is that, you know, we're pretty close to pre-COVID levels, which is good news. That shows recovery of the system. That shows that our teachers are doing what we've asked them to do and working with students to make up that learning loss that occurred back in 2019 and the year after that. But, you know, I think that was a critical question that was asked, is, you know, if we're saying that this is needed due to COVID, well, let's go back and see where we are where our students are performing relative to the year before COVID. And I think what we're seeing is, you know, our students have done a very good job. Our teachers have done a good job getting students back to pre-COVID levels. And so, you know, the appropriate question then was, you know, is this policy change needed? If not, if we are actually, you know, pretty close to pre-COVID levels, then that maybe that suggests that this is, you know, unfortunately, the same situation that we've had for years where we have a small number of students who don't meet the requirement. And maybe this is a reminder that we have got to focus our time, energy, and resources on supporting that small number of students, because I think everybody agrees the goal is to have everyone meet that standard and walk across the stage with a diploma that truthfully signals that they're college and career ready.
Do you think this is something that's going to be revisited yet again and brought forward? Because there is this move afoot in this country, you know, this follow-up as what has happened in sports activities and otherwise. Everybody gets a trophy. And we hear about this relative to that word equity, bias, and others. I mean, we're seeing it on so many different fronts, a bunch of articles now about college admissions and doing away with objective criteria and standards and becoming more and more subjective, adopting grading that's pass-fail, letting students pick how they want to be tested on the material. There's so many different approaches, as though what we have historically done in this country is being flawed, but no one ever really puts any science behind how is it flawed. I mean, you know, when you think of U.S. history, for example, I think of rogue memorization. Right. I mean, it's not like a whole lot of synthesization of material across multiple silos that you have to connecting dots and things of that nature. It's pretty much rogue memorization. Always has been. Didn't change much.
There is a lot of content to memorize, but let's remember that test not only has multiple choice, it also has sections where students have to write about passages that they've read. They mm-hmm. have to write about the Declaration of Independence. They have to write about the Civil War. And so, you know, it is understanding the content and retaining that content, but it's also, I think, reflective of the crisis that we have in terms of literacy and children's ability to read and internalize what they're reading and to be able to write. And so I think we see that, you know, when we look at these tests as well, these tests are not just bubble tests. These tests require students to be able to read and to write, to elaborate on the facts of passages that they're reading. And this is what we know children need to be able to do to be successful. So that's one thing. But to your question about equity and access, look, I'll be the first one to say I agree that we have an equity problem. I believe that there are still children who don't have access to educational opportunity. But the way that we need to address that is to really recommit ourselves to make sure that we're doing everything possible to help every child be college and career ready, to get to the levels of educational attainment that we know they're successful. It's, you know, I know it may be tempting to water down our standards at times or to say, well, you know, just one more year. Just one more year of a pass of let's waive this policy or let's waive accountability for one year. But in the end, that doesn't serve our children well. If we continue to pass students on from one year to the next or from high school into post-secondary or into the workplace unprepared, that's not helping them. They're actually going to find themselves in a situation later in life where there are standards, there are expectations, that if they can't meet them, that's going to have a devastating effect on their future. And so we have to be honest about the needs that we know we need to meet, the standards at which we need to prepare them to achieve. And where that's not happening, we have to recommit ourselves to addressing that issue.
Yeah, I mean, you've worked in the education department. You've seen the commitment by parents, families, and otherwise of those that are really engaged in a child's education that typically, especially in the early formative years, pre-K, K, 1, 2, making huge differences against those where you don't come out of that climate. But what is always odd to me is that it's hard for the educational system to change that paradigm to any extent. And so when we talk about this equity issue, there's always been a situation where there's not equity because there's just too many different pieces of criteria that influence a child's life, whether it's mentoring into family, a formal process of setting a moral compass or otherwise, that everybody kind of does it different. Some do it better than others. And the fact of the matter is I don't know that anybody really starts in the same point. And the school climate itself can only do so much. But I, like you, believe that we shouldn't be dropping the requirements on the back end in the hopes of changing this phenomenon on the front end, because they're not even remotely connected. And that's the problem I'm having with all of this. And I think they're selling people a pig and a poke.
Well, no one ever said it's easy, and you're absolutely right. I mean, our schools have children who come from all walks of life, different family incomes, different levels of educational attainment within their families. And so, you know, the job of the school and our educators is difficult in addressing each of those needs. You know, every kid learns different. Some have special learning needs, even in the same classroom, and that is a challenging situation. But we know it can be done. We have places we can point to where schools that you would think just based on their demographics would be the most challenging, you know, situations to be able to educate children at proficient levels. And it's happening. We had a school leader come to Bessie yesterday to testify against the motion, who works in an alternative charter school where they serve students, at-risk students, who are some of the most challenged students in the state, who have experienced trauma, who have failed school, dropped out, not passed tests, have been involved in the justice system, are single parents. And for them, I think she testified that 100% of their students, they get to meet that passing standard. They work with them, they provide the supports that are needed, and they are successful. With every one of those kids, they are able to meet the standard. And if they can do it with that student population, we know that others can. It can be done. No one is saying it's easy. This is hard work, but we know it can be done. And if we're truly committed to the success of our students, then we owe it to them to help them and help them meet the standard, not to do away with the standard. We know that that does not serve them well in the long run.
Do you think that maybe we put the pressure on the wrong pressure points, you know, of we got to get you to second grade, we got to get you to third grade, where the truth be told, there may be a huge return on sitting in first grade for 2 years working on all the fundamentals?
I think, again, every child is different. I think are to be able to individualize their experience. You know, there's a bill going through the legislature right now that would institute a third grade retention policy for students who are not yet reading on grade level to hold them back to do some, and not just to hold them back and repeat what we did before, but to say, you know, in order to set you up for success from this point forward, we are at a moment in time where we see that you're struggling. We're going to hit the pause button, and we're going to give you some intensive supports to address your needs right now so that before we move you into a more rigorous environment, we make sure that you're strong in what you've learned thus far and that you're really ready to continue. Because we know from many years that
I don't mean to be rude, but I got to get to a break. Can you stay with me? Because I'd like to hear more about this, and I think this is a great topic. We're visiting with, and pronounce your last name again for me, Aaron, so I get it right. Aaron Bendeley. Thank you so much, Vice President for Policy and Strategy with the Pelican Institute. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. We're back. We're visiting with Erin Bendeley, Vice President for Policy and Strategy with the Pelican Institute. She was quoted as saying, "Now is not the time to roll back expectations for our students or water down accountability for our schools." With just 45% of our high school students scoring proficient in English and 30% in math, we should be working harder than ever to prepare them for the increasingly rigorous demands of today's economy. I couldn't have said it better myself, Erin, and I agree wholeheartedly. Before the break, we were talking about a bill that's in the state legislature now about making sure that there's a reading proficiency at the third grade, and if not, certain things would have to occur, I think is where you were.
That's right, and as many might be familiar, you know, Louisiana used to have a similar requirement for fourth grade when we had what was called high stakes testing for students who were not ready by the fourth grade or by the end of the eighth grade, hadn't shown that they met the level of preparedness to go to the next grade level. We used to have a retention policy and have since relaxed that requirement. I think what's different this go round, and as we've seen other states like Mississippi implement this, particularly in the early grades, is it's not the retention itself that makes the difference. It's retention with a purpose. It's retaining the student, or like I said, you know, pressing the pause button to say, we're at a moment where we know that you need more help. We know that we need to give the student additional supports, not to simply repeat what we did last year and hope for a better outcome. But we are at a moment where we know this child needs some significant help. We're going to hit the pause button. We're going to give them the help and supports and interventions they need so that they can truly be ready for success from that point forward and not set them up for continued challenges.
So let me ask this question. So, you know, a new student comes into the public school system, let's say in, I guess most start in kindergarten or first grade?
Most start in kindergarten, and now with the legislation passed last year, Louisiana have to come in and take kindergarten. Kindergarten is mandatory now.
Okay. So we come in kindergarten. Do we assess the student day one, first week of kindergarten? Do we do testing and kind of get a baseline? Where is this student today?
Yes. For many years, Louisiana schools have been required to do such an assessment. I think what we have now, due to some recent efforts over the last few years, is greatly improved the quality of that assessment to really be able to understand where students are strong and where they have some weaknesses, particularly in their ability to read, that we're really focusing our attention on diagnosing those challenges early on so that we can intervene earlier.
So if they're, like, way behind the curve in reading and reading comprehension, do we do something different with them right then and there?
We do. And actually, thanks to a law that was passed last year by Senator Sharon Hewitt, the state is now required to do a number of things. They have greatly increased the training of new and prospective teachers that are going to be serving in those grades in the classroom. The state has a literacy strategy that's based on what they call the science of reading. And there has been a statewide literacy commission that has been meeting for several years now to take a lot of the research that's been done, a lot of the strategies that have been successful in other states, including Mississippi, to say we have a lot more information right now on what works to help kids read that we need to be employing in our classroom. If it takes, you know, helping our teachers to get stronger in how they diagnose and support these needs, we now have more tools in the toolbox to be able to do that.
So am I hearing this correctly, that these are more relatively new tools? It's not something that's been in place for 5, 6, 7 years then?
I think what you've seen, particularly within the literacy space, is that has evolved over time. You know, even those who kind of specialize in this area have spent a lot of time in recent years looking to see what works in teaching students to read, particularly young children. And I think as we have been able to see what works and what doesn't work. There's been a lot of kind of looping back to those things that have been tried and have not been successful. Let's clear those things out and let's go with what we know now works. And there's been a lot of attention being paid to let's get back to what we know and we have evidence works in the classroom. Let's make sure that we are preparing our teachers to do those things and to do them early on.
Because when I knew that these numbers were similar to what you quoted in this article, 45% at proficiency, which is, a mediocre level, right? I mean, this is mediocrity at best. To say that 45% have reached proficient in English and 30% in math, it's not like high performing, right?
That's not advanced. That's proficiency. That's basically you are where you need to be. You know, when we certify that students have what we call, basic skills in English, math in particular, the things that they're going to need to go to the next level. And if you can think about a 12th grader walking across the stage, getting a diploma, and then going to, Southeastern Louisiana University and enrolling in freshman courses, that's the minimum that we need to do to make sure that student doesn't have to then, pay tuition, take a year's worth of classes, repeating content that they should have learned in high school, and having to waste an entire year of college just completing remedial courses. What we know in terms of where students need to be to have to avoid that is we have to get them to those levels. And as you can see, we are far from the level at which we need to be to make sure that students don't find themselves in that situation.
So if we're assessing every year as we move through these years, is what I'm hearing you say, none of this then is a surprise to us within the school system.
This is data that we have, and again, thinking back to yesterday's discussion at Bessie, we didn't just find out over the past few weeks that we have, 2,400 students that were not on track to meet graduation requirements. We knew that.
I mean, we knew that last August.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things
if we're honest with ourselves, we knew that last August, and and that's when the bells and the whistles should have been going off, right? I mean, that's the complete total irritant for me is that if we are truly assessing and evaluating this data every year that our kids are in these schools, this is not a surprise.
Absolutely not a surprise.
I'm trying to figure out who presses the pause button to say, okay, the path that we've been on thus far is not working. The definition of insanity is to go take the same approach over and over again in the hopes of achieving a different result. For these students, it ain't working. So what do we got to do to get it to work? We have validated, revalidated, then re-revalidated, if we're doing these assessments every year, that it's not working. Am I wrong on that? Well, am I overstating this?
No, not at all. And one of the things that came out yesterday, and we've known this for years, is that most high school students, particularly those in the 12th grade, don't take a full load of classes. And so one question that came up yesterday is, we're sitting here talking about, an emergency waiver for these 24 students that have not met the graduation requirement. What have our schools been doing with them over the past school year? 2,400, yes. Yeah. What have we been doing with those students over the past year? Did they even take a full course load? Did they retake these classes? Did they get the supports and tutoring and interventions and credit recovery? Because if they didn't, shame on us for not getting them the help that they need if we just gave them, a half-time status in their senior year knowing that they weren't ready.
Yeah,
and
that's
we can
the thing.
Change that.
I think everyone that's passing these laws and Sharon Hewitt's law and all of these others are all well-intentioned. And I get it, but we've got to weave it into the organization operationally where it makes sense, and it's got to mean something. And what what I'm getting and gleaning from this is that it's almost as though we're going through the motions, you know, but we're not stopping, taking a deep breath, and altering a course for some of these kids. You have a few more minutes?
I do.
All right. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Aaron Bendeley, Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute, talking about our educational system here in the state of Louisiana as a result of a meeting, emergency meeting that was called by the BSEE Board to pass students that have not reached the minimum proficiency requirements set out by state law. And that failed by one vote. And we're talking about why we find ourselves in the position that we do. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. We're back, folks. We're visiting with Aaron Bendeley, Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute. We're talking about the educational system in the state of Louisiana. Aaron, one of the other things that kind of struck me were the comments of one of the BSEE members, and I don't mean this to be critical, but I just kind of confused by it. Holly Buffy says that she can't look these kids in the eye and say we would prefer you to take a LEAP test than go to work, a reference to the shorthand title for the end of the course exams in question. But we do that every year, don't we? I mean, we're compelling that they take the test, and there's some that are not going to make the number, and they've got to go do their remediation. I don't understand. You know, we look them in the face every year.
You're right. I mean, every year it's hard to look at a child and say you've just not met the standard and you've not achieved the diploma. But I don't think that calls for us looking them in the eye and tell them that they're ready. They're ready to face an increasingly demanding workforce and economy and not be truthful when we're saying it. I mean, that again, and I said this yesterday, that diploma is supposed to mean something. It's supposed to signify to that student, to their family, to the public, to the employer or the college that they're going to, that student has mastered basic skills, that they are leaving our educational system prepared and having learned the things that students need to learn in high school. And if we're giving them a diploma and suggesting that they are ready, knowing in our heart that they're not, you know, I don't think that is doing right by these kids. I think that's a disservice. I think that's not being honest with them.
I agree with you. I was also mystified by, and maybe I don't fully understand the governance model of the education system here in the state of Louisiana, but that the superintendent of education, Cade Brumley, would not opine on this issue. I mean, I think it would be an important enough issue that people would want to hear from this. I know I would want to hear from the superintendent of education.
Well, there were certainly a lot of questions about the data and the information that the board had in front of them to make what was a significant statewide policy change. Again, in an emergency called meeting with, you know, 2 days' notice, there was very little data or information that was a part of these discussions yesterday. In my 15 years in working with this board, you know, I said in my testimony yesterday, one thing that I have such deep respect for them for is that over time, they deliberate on these issues, taking into account all of the information. I was concerned that I didn't see that yesterday, not only on this issue, but after they voted to defeat this measure, there was a follow-up vote to then give relief to 25 different school systems to basically approve the same waiver for graduates, or I should say high school seniors, in those 25 parishes that were impacted by Hurricane Ida. If you look at those 25 parishes, there was no information available at the meeting yesterday to say, you know, how many days were they out of school? Which of these 25 parishes were impacted more than others? How many students does this affect? There was no information presented, but yet that motion was approved. And so now I think, you know, there are still lingering questions about exactly what action did the board take yesterday and what exactly is the effect of this? What is that going to do? You know, exactly how many students does this address? And also, you know, let's be clear that when this change is made, it not only allows these students to get a diploma who haven't met the requirement, but it also generates points for those high schools in their school ratings. And so there are a lot of lingering questions that many of us have about exactly what happened yesterday and what are the effects of that decision.
That raises a level of skepticism for me. It was going to be my follow-up question that you went there. Why do we not award points on a weighted situation as it relates to the accomplishment of these kids and not just simply they get points for meeting the minimum criteria, or do they? How does this point system work?
Well, that's, I think, part of a bigger discussion that has been happening at the state level for the past year, which is taking another look at our accountability system overall, because you're right, it's quite complex. Even those who work in the education system have a hard time, explaining exactly what goes into the accountability system. You know, to what extent is that based on student outcomes versus inputs? Is it easy for parents and the public to understand? Because, you know, I think what's most important about an accountability system is that when it generates a rating or a score, that families understand what that means so that then that information becomes actionable. They can use that to say, this is a school that needs intervention, that needs improvement. Worst case scenario, this is a school that has significant issues and needs state intervention. Or even for the benefit of that parent, this is a school that I have some concerns about that might not be serving the needs of my child or other students well. Maybe I want to use that information to say I want to make another educational choice. And so there's been a lot of discussion of improving, strengthening, and clarifying and simplifying our accountability system.
Do you think they would advocate for this as strong as they did if they got no points for those that they gave a waiver to? I wonder. I just have to ask the question.
There was one superintendent who came to the table who said, you know, we'd be okay with this policy change even if it didn't affect our scores. I don't know that those views were shared by all superintendents. But, again, you can't just look at these things in a vacuum. You can't these rough decisions without having all of the information about what exactly is the effect of this decision we are about to make. It has huge implications.
Yep. Absolutely. Erin Bendeley, Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
I did, too. Thank you so much for having me on.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.